Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the official show for the month of April 2024. And what we usually do in the official show is we talk about some news and new releases and take a look into the coming month to talk about what games are coming out then. So let's get into it. Before we kick things off with the video game stuff, let's time capsule this episode.
Oh, God.
This is what's happening in the world.
Oh, God.
Our obviously criminal former president had a trial start for his obvious crimes.
Yeah.
Harvey Weinstein had his rape convictions thrown out in New York City. Don't worry, he's still in prison because he still has all those rape convictions in California.
Mm-hmm.
No real gaming news to speak of. The only real gaming thing that happened in the world of Nintendo was the Indie Direct, which we'll get into, unless you guys want to talk about two rapists who are in the news right now.
I don't know. We could talk about TikTok basically being put on the market if they ever want to...
Oh, sure.
You know,
if they want to remain in this country?
Yeah, essentially.
Mm. So, you know, I think my main question about that is how do they enforce... Like, is it just not going to be... If they don't sell, if they don't divest to an American company, will it just, like, get removed from download services and, like, blocked on your phone? Like, how do they...
I assume so. Yeah. Like, their servers would probably be put on some kind of blacklist that you couldn't access. I mean, think about it. They already kind of do it with various streaming services. Like, there's already that weird rule where some places are allowed to stream things and some aren't. You know, like, how does, how do they know to withhold, like, local sports broadcasts if they have blackout rules?
Hmm.
You know, things like that. I'm sure there's a way to get around it. I'm sure VPNs would be a way to get around it. And the same way that you can use VPNs to get around all kinds of crazy things.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I think it would just make it that much more difficult for your... You know, it would probably scare away the mainstream people that just want to download an app and use it easily.
Sure.
Or they would just migrate back to... Instagram or whatever they were using before TikTok.
Like YouTube Shorts, like that
yeah.
All of us over 40 do.
Sure.
I don't engage in TikTok. I don't have TikTok. I don't engage in it because like that's...
Are you like me and all they want to recommend to you is like South Korean baseball games and like the cheerleaders at South Korean baseball games?
No, but now I'm interested. Tell me more right now.
Because basically they're just at baseball stadiums doing TikTok dances.
Okay.
To large audiences. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know why. It thinks that's the thing I'm about to consume. So
I mean, now I'm interested. But the...
Questions for the algorithm.
The application itself, like, it's for people younger than me. Like, that's their thing.
And I guess that's the concern, right? I think that's the whole idea is that, basically, as a nation, we don't want a foreign entity, a state-owned foreign entity, kind of dictating how the algorithm feeds information to people, because it was proven that TikTok is doing that. It's mm-hmm. radicalizing Americans.
We want Americans radicalizing Americans.
Like Facebook did during 2015 and 2016.
We don't want some Chinese company doing it. Again, we want Mark Zuckerberg doing it.
Yeah, there is absolutely a hypocrisy to that because... And again, it'll just be... Like, there are so many very, very rich individuals out there that'll just buy TikTok the same way that Elon Musk purchased Twitter.
Which is going great, I hear.
Yeah, but someone who's probably not so incompetent in running a business will probably buy TikTok. He'll buy it and then he'll just tank it too.
Well, we need to worry about like every American election now. It's like, hey, you know what? We might accidentally elect some competent fascist this time.
Well, and you know what? To bring it full circle, I think it's actually kind of... You were about to talk about, you know, the National Enquirer, David Pecker, hush money trial that's happening for Donald Trump right now. And that proves... You know, that he was working, he was involved in this, well, I mean, he hasn't been found guilty yet, but it's very clear that he was involved in this conspiracy.
Pretty obvious.
To, yeah, you know, manufacture fake claims, not only to suppress, you know, the news about himself, but also to, you know, circulate false news. Like the one that was just so fucking hilarious, which is founded on nothing, is that Ben Carson left a sponge in someone's brain while performing an operation.
May he rest in peace.
Ben Carson was trying to run for president. If anyone didn't know who this guy is, Ben Carson is a doctor. He's a brain surgeon. He was trying to run for president. And he was Trump saw him as a threat. So he had the National Enquirer circulate this news article that he had done open brain surgery on somebody and left one of his like surgical sponges in their head.
Which is ridiculous on two counts. One, like he of course did not leave a sponge in somebody's head. And second, he was never a threat. No one was ever going to let that fucking Carson.
Or like that, you know, Ted.
May he rest in peace.
Ted Cruz's dad killed Kennedy. he is the Zodiac killer, but there is no evidence that his dad
he's tied to Kennedy.
it was so fucking funny because. They doctored a picture of Ted Cruz's dad, Chet Cruz, whatever the fuck his name is, next to
Lee Harvey Oswald.
And the photo was fake. And they're like plastered on all these tabloids and shit. Anyway, fuck that guy. Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Fuck them both.
I love that during the thing, and you're trying to move on, we're not. I love that David Pecker, in his inner, like, while being kind of deposed and on the stand, literally said, like, you know, I haven't been formally charged. I am telling you right now, I committed a crime, and I knew this was a crime, and I did it anyways. Basically saying, like, don't make this a 6-year thing for me. If you want to charge me for something, I committed a crime, just fucking do it. Don't make me wait 6 years from now to put me on trial for this knowingly obvious crime I committed.
What's his angle? Is he in a hurry?
To get it over with. Yeah, he probably just doesn't want to have his name dragged through. He's just fucking...
The National Enquirer guy doesn't want his name dragged through the mud?
I mean, think about that guy that tried to issue the bond in the other trial for Trump, who's now about to have his own business audited because attempted to do business with Donald Trump.
Mm.
It's like, the guy is just cancer. Like, the guy will just destroy you. And I think that's what he's saying is, like, rip the Band-Aid off right now, please.
Yeah, it's absolutely...
I'm telling you, literally, everything I know, I'm confessing on stand in a different crime that I committed a crime. So if you need to do something about it, please do it.
It's wild, like, just how many people in his orbit end up in jail or in prison or on some sort of, like, probation or something. Like, it's... For a guy who allegedly does no wrong, like, he sure does surround himself with a lot of criminals.
Wow. Okay, so Indie Direct.
Yeah, so we had an Indie Direct.
I'm trying to open my soda for like 10 minutes here.
You look so dehydrated. We had an Indie Showcase on the 17th of April. It was kind of a surprise. They announced it like the day before and went ahead and dropped it the next day. I think it was like 10 a.m. Eastern time, but whatever. Not important. I actually was a lot more positive on this one than the last one. You know, these Indie Directs, there's a bunch of games that I think look interesting in this one.
I think the last one, what was on the last one, though?
I don't have it committed to memory. I just remember,
John, this is your podcast.
Like, that's why I have notes. You need to commit. I can look through my notes.
If you're going to half-ass exactly this, I don't know why I'm here.
But yeah, like, a lot of times with these Indie Directs, if there's like one or two games that look interesting, then I consider that like a win. Because sometimes it's just like, yeah, these all look kind of neat, but not things I'm going to play. But this one, they opened up with an absolute banger, 10 out of 10, Little Kitty Big City.
Yep.
Out on May 9th.
Faces, but you do know we're recording a podcast, right?
It's just for you, though.
I think this is Untitled Goose Game with parkour.
Yeah, maybe.
I thought the same thing. Like, the one part where in the trailer where he, like, trips a guy, I was like, is this Goose Game? But with adorable hats? I don't understand. Like,
cats are, of course, like the goose of the mammal kingdom.
Yeah, they're assholes.
So. Mm-hmm. I don't really have an opinion on this. I didn't really look particularly interesting to me. It sounds like Ryan's in. Day one.
I'm just sick of these Indie Directs. In the beginning of the game, we have to listen to the people who make the game ramble about how they made the game. I'm like, just show me the fucking game.
hurry up and show me the commercials.
I don't care.
Enough foreplay.
Sell me something. The second it goes to the game, I'm going to forget you forever. Like,
I think every once in a while it's cool. I think, like, to your point, it's a bit tiresome if they do it for every single game. Like, they have some talking heads. Give a little chat about why they're making the game that they're making. Like, I don't particularly care that, you know, you really loved your cat, so now you want to make a cat game. We all love our cats. It's fine. I think a lot of this, my own conspiracy, time to put it on the tinfoil hat. Back in, it must have been like 2014, Nintendo did an E3 Direct. It was back when they were E3 was still a thing, you might remember. But Nintendo was the first to sort of pull out and say, we're not going to like have a live stage presence anymore. We're not going to do like these live press conferences. This is stupid. It's going to show you a pre-recorded video. And in this pre-recorded video, they had the Muppets of Reggie Iwata and Miyamoto. And they all like turned into Star Fox characters. And I think this is also the one where they had like the Yoshi's Woolly World, and like the lady would like came in and talked about how she crocheted all these little Yoshis, like, and now you can go buy some. And they got like a really positive response to that sort of approach, and now they're just fucking doing it for everybody.
Maybe this also is supposed to like help brand these and make it obvious that these are in fact indie games, that these are not games masquerading as indie games,
sure.
Because it's like you got a couple of people here involved in the production of these things.
Yeah, and I think you might be right about that, because there was one time there was an indie direct, and one of the indie games in Coastal Swim, Konami, well-known small-time publisher Konami.
They don't make games.
So that's true. Some of these indie companies probably make more games than Konami now.
Well, I didn't get into like the whole fervor over it, but I remember people were saying that about Dave the Diver, that it was being called an indie game, but it's not really an indie game. I don't know, but for some reason people got really up in arms about the distinction of whether or not that specific title was called indie. It's like the pretentiousness of music.
Well,
it's
who made Dave the Duck?
I have no idea. I played it a ton. I know it was distributed.
Not enough loot boxes.
It was distributed by a fairly major company, that's for sure. But I don't know how big. I don't think it was a very big development team or anything. Again, I didn't want to get into it.
We probably talk about this every time we talk about indie directs. It's like the line between what is an indie game and what is not is such like a weird distinction at this point, because if a lot of these games we're talking about were released on Super Nintendo or even up to like GameCube at this point, they would just be full retail releases. They're robust enough to be like what we considered back then a full game, not just like a small little downloadable thing if such a service existed at the time. Most of these games like fucking had the same sort of scope and depth of content as something like fucking iNinja, best GameCube game ever made.
I'm telling you, I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, if they re-release iNinja, I'm gonna get it and get bored of it. It's got age as well.
You,
it is a thoroughly
perfect, thoroughly perfect game.
I would love to be.
I feel like this has happened recently with a few of these games where you're like, oh fuck yes, it's coming back, and then you play it and you're like, that was fine, but
yeah.
I mean, none of us ever thought Turok was good, so
that's a fair point.
I mean, they're robots boxing. I mean,
and then the eggshell mode where you had to do it without taking a hit. Oh my god,
that was
god.
So hard.
That was the last thing I did in that game.
It was brutal.
But that's Little Kitty Big City.
What? One down.
Yars Rising is coming out sometime this year. I had this one sort of highlighted as like maybe one to pay attention to, only because WayForward is making it.
And they made.
They made the Shantae games. They made the new River City Girls.
Yep.
Yeah.
Something that maybe qualifies as news. WayForward did like an April Fool's joke at the beginning of the month, where like the Double Dragon characters were going to be put into River City Girls 2. And of course, they released on April 1st. Everyone knew it was fake, but they got such a positive reaction to it. Like, oh, well, okay, I guess we'll just do it. So now they're gonna like officially add those two characters into River City Girls 2,
nice.
Which is a notable good game. But I don't know, this Yars Rising game, apparently it's like a remake or a reimagining of an old Atari game. I'd never heard of it. Sort of like a Metroid-style adventure game. I'll keep an eye on it because it's WayForward. But I think the character to me looked like it was moving really slowly.
It's very stiff. It doesn't, the second I saw River City Girls, I was like, oh, this may be something that I'll get. And then I watched the actual gameplay. It's just, I don't know, it does not look enjoyable to me.
We'll see. They still got some time to work on it. Any interest in that Refined Self game that's coming out this summer? That's like the psychological test of the game.
I think it's an interesting concept. I don't have any interest in the actual game, but it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I don't need a video game telling me I'm a psychopath. Don't you judge me, game.
If they make it so that it's like, there's 100+ personalities, and one of them is just straight up
expert. What alerts the police? No. Ryan, any thoughts on that one?
No, not really.
Cool. Moving on. Sticky Business is out now. Oh, that was the sticker making and selling game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now that I'm looking at the list, I can't quite remember what it was, but I don't know. No real thoughts on that one. Ryan, anything for that one?
Nope.
Cool. Anton Blast. This one is out like way in November, but there's a demo for it already. I have not tried the demo, but I think this one looked kind of interesting.
This one looked fun.
Yeah.
This is like the one of the two games this entire indie. I was like, I would play that.
Yeah, that's like when I was watching. I was like, hey, this looks kind of cool. I'm like, man, it's out in November. Like, well, then I'm going to forget about it until then. Ryan, anything for Anton Blast?
They abuse the shaky image a lot whenever you make contact with anything. But it looks like, yeah, it looks like, I don't know, like a SNES or Genesis style platformer, like with really vibrant animation. So it looks pretty cool.
Maybe there'll be a way to turn off that screen shake.
Let's tone it down a little
bit. I feel like it's going to give me anxiety.
One thing I do in almost every game that I play, if I experience rumble at any point, I like, wait, options menu, turn that shit off. I don't care anymore. I don't need your force feedback.
John moves around in first-person shooters with the arrow keys.
Absolutely ridiculous. I only use a controller. No mouse and keyboard for me. But you know, drives me nuts. I have a work computer at my job. There are times where I'm like out and about and I'm using other computers around property. And it drives me nuts when people turn off the number lock on their keypad. Like, what kind of psychopath turns off the number lock?
Well, are they
keep that shit on.
Are they numbers there for a season? Are they battery-powered keyboards?
No.
That saves battery power if you turn it off.
Mm.
I have, like, USB, like, wireless ones.
Okay.
Yeah, but they still last, like, months anyways.
Oh, you'd be surprised. I have to change the batteries out on those things, like, constantly.
Mm. These are, like, disposable batteries?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, I have, like, wireless ones.
Wireless keyboards.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super useful. But yeah, the 10 key actually just, I don't know, for whatever reason, running that 10 key really drains the batteries. Or I guess it, you know, just...
How strange.
Yep.
Valley Peaks.
I don't pay for the batteries at work, so I don't care.
That's true.
Valley Peaks is out some point this year. I don't remember what this one is.
It looks like the...
something with frogs?
A short hike.
Oh, sure.
Vaguely like a short hike, I guess you could say.
I like that game. That was all right.
Yeah, it looks boring.
But it seems like there's a bunch of like platforming and stuff that happens in it. I mean, just really, it just looks like that in the animation sense.
Oh, the aesthetic?
Yeah, but... I don't know. I really have no idea.
Okay. Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. This is one that was announced at a previous Direct, and I've been looking out for it. This is the first time they've shown it since that Direct. We got a release date. It's out May 16th. This one actually looks like a really like interesting psychological thriller point-and-click adventure style game.
Hmm.
I'm into it. You guys got any thoughts on that one?
I like the black and white with just like... you know, kind of splashes of red.
Maybe the accents.
Yeah.
It's a cool aesthetic. I just don't know what the game is.
So little... I think, like, hopefully it doesn't get too visual novel-y. I mean, that wouldn't be, like, the worst thing in the world. Because I could just, like, put it on my desk and let them talk while I'm doing some work. But hopefully it's more of, like, a style that's... I can't think of a contemporary point-and-click adventure game.
My worst
Monkey
guess?
Monkey Island or Myst or something like that.
My worst guess is that it's going to be like those shrine puzzles from Zelda where you have to like use the gyro to navigate the marble through the thing. It's an entire game of that.
And then it was like, hey, here's two marbles and they need to go in the hole at the same time. You're like, fuck you!
You've got to use your stasis. The Princess Peach game actually had one of those Marble Madness style things.
Oh, that's the worst.
They like, hey, do this thing. He's like, really? Oh, you were doing this? Okay, fine. Thankfully, it only happened the one time. Europa is out sometime this year. There's a demo for this one as well. Ryan, you had a good comment about this one.
Oh, just that I really like the world that this is set in. It looks like it's a big open world adventure game. And they have this very vibrant and colorful... just very pretty looking world. And I think in our thread I basically said like whatever this game dev did, like Pokemon needs to look into this.
Yeah, these need to take a lesson from this indie developer.
It does look really nice.
Makes a much more aesthetically pleasing world than they did with
it's so Scarlet pretty Violet. That I'm gonna be keeping an eye on this one. It does look really nice.
Yeah, I'll see if I can try out the demo, maybe report back on that one on the mini show. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Splintered Fate. It's out this July, you guys. This is a Turtles podcast. We talk about Ninja Turtles all the time.
We really do. With good reason. Ninja Turtles, yeah. Wonderful.
This looks really good.
Yeah, I'm pumped. This looks really cool.
Apparently it was a game that was on mobile platforms, and now it's making its console debut. Mm-hmm. I think they have like time exclusivity or something. But yeah, looks really, really good. Everyone has a favorite turtle. There's no wrong answer to who's your favorite turtle, but there is a correct answer, and it is Raph. But there's no wrong answer.
Well, your favorite character may also not be a turtle. It's true. That's the thing.
Could be.
There's lots of really great characters in it.
Could be Old Hob or Usagi Yojimbo.
It could, in fact. What if it's what's
her head?
No, Venus, or what is it? Venus de Milo.
Oh, Venus de Milo,
the one woman turtle.
Yep.
No, I like Casey Jones. I've always liked Casey Jones. Mm. I think April O'Neil's really cool. Yeah, we see like Leatherhead. They're showing off Leatherhead here.
If I find my in my pile of comic books around here, if I find my Ninja Turtles one, I'll lend you the first volume. See what you think. Casey Jones is an important character from early on in the Ninja Turtles comic books that started in 2012.
Oh, I was gonna say because I read the Eastman and Laird ones when I was younger, the black and white ones. Mm-hmm. Those are so cool. But yeah, I'm sure that the series has like changed drastically in the past, 30 years it's been since that happened.
Yeah, it got like a full like reboot. I'm not sure how many times, if at all, the Ninja Turtles like they just decided to start from scratch and retell. But in 2012, they just did a full reboot and brought in all the characters and people you recognize and introduced some new ones, and it's still ongoing. Yeah. They're restarting at issue number one because it got to 150 issues, and so I'm like, yeah, let's do issue number one, but it's still a continuing storyline.
Yeah,
and it's really good.
Also Shredder. Shredder is just a kick-ass villain.
What were we talking about? Oh, I was at
the game.
Roguelite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a roguelite.
Yeah.
That was cool. It reminded me a little bit like what we praise about like Hades, where you do these runs and you gain these buffs when you're doing the runs, and there's also a currency that you take back. And it seems like a lot of roguelites do this now, where you have permanent upgrades that you're working through when you're bringing back as much currency as you can.
This is kind of this is a multiplayer one though.
Yep.
Which is weird for roguelites because usually they're not multiplayer.
I think like Ninja Turtles really lends itself like super well for obvious reasons to cooperative stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like ever since they started doing Ninja Turtles games, except for that one, it's all been about cooperative experience.
Roguelikes is that one genre that I'm always like, I don't want to play because it's a roguelike, but I end up playing a whole bunch of roguelites. Like I've been playing Skull of the Hero Slayer, and that one's been a lot of fun. And I got through my first, I actually got through the run for the first time last night. But I play so many of these roguelites, and I don't know why, because I say I don't like the genre, but I play so many of them.
I think they're fun challenges. I think it's fun to play a game that you know you're going to lose, only to try to learn the mechanics and get better and best it.
I just get frustrated because, I mean, I can get through the game, and I can do it over and over and over again, but I'm only going to get through it, like, once every 20. Like, I'm just not good at these games.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting here that, and ironically, in spite of this being an indie direct, that the name of the studio behind this is Super Evil Megacorp.
Yeah.
that does not sound like an indie title.
They made something else. Wes, see if you can look them up. They made something else relatively recently that I think we've spoken about on the podcast.
Don't do that just because he said to do that.
Yeah, I just got done with work and I'm used to people just telling me what to do, so I mean... Hey Wes, I need you to do some research on this particular thing for a case. I'm like, why not?
We'll circle back to that when Wes finds the information. I was at work the other day and I was wearing a Raphael t-shirt, as I do.
You asked earlier. Raph is, of course, the best.
Right, right. And so one of my coworkers who works in a different department was like, oh, Raphael, is that your favorite turtle? Like, yeah, definitely. And I was being polite. Like, what's your favorite turtle? Like, I think I like Leonardo. And that's, again, no wrong answer, but there is a right answer. No wrong answer. Leonardo, like, I got to respect that pick because that's, like, a tough one to be your favorite. Because Leonardo, like, Everyone else has like a fun trait to their personality, whereas like Leonardo is supposed to be the anti-fun one.
Yeah, he's the leader. He's the one that's got to look out for everybody.
Yeah, he's the only one who bears any sort of burden of responsibility. So it's an unconventional pick, but a good one.
Yeah, I always go Donatello.
Mm. He does machines.
Yep.
I always thought Donatello was like solidly last place.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but yeah.
He made the Turtomobile and all of their gadgets and stuff.
I think Leo's 2 and then Mikey's 3. Yeah, and I think the biggest gap that exists between all of them is the gap between Mikey and Donatello.
Mikey's my least favorite, in my opinion. Yeah. He's just...
obnoxious.
I get it. You're... don't take anything seriously, and I don't know.
I would probably go Raph. I probably like
Mikey. As your least favorite, yeah.
Who is my least favorite? Oh, geez. It might also be Donatello. Oh, but I don't know. But they're all close, like really closely together. I don't. Donatello's not a bad.
Oh my god! I hate you both.
There's no wrong answer.
I'll show you when the game comes out. Wreck some face with Donnie. So. Super Evil Megacorp has come out with Rebel Moon with Netflix Games.
Oh, no.
Vainglory. God knows what that is. And Catalyst Black. Vainglory is a MOBA for touch. And Catalyst Black is a battleground shooter.
No, we've definitely not talked about them then. I must be thinking of someone else.
Then the Turtles game coming out. Although this Turtle game looks pretty good.
Sure does. Are you guys going to get Cat Quest 3 on August 8th?
Try to stop me.
I think if I were going to get a cat game, I don't know if it would be this one.
You think
looks fun enough, though, I guess. I don't know.
We'd be totally lost in the narrative. We'd have no idea what was going on in Cat Quest 3.
If they made a SWAT Cats a video game, yeah, I'd be playing that one.
If there is one species of animal that is not at all cooperative with their own kind, it's cats. So I don't know why this is like a co-op cat game.
It is sort of an antithesis.
The greatest pleasure a cat derives is disrupting whatever another cat is doing.
What are you doing there? Eating? Push over the ball.
What are you doing? Napping? Push it off the bookshelf.
That Stitch game is out now. Sort of a puzzle game with a crocheting or...
I don't think I'm going to get this one, but I could see this game being super addictive.
Yeah, you know, like, when they first talked about, like, oh, like, knitting and crocheting, I was like, oh, this is going to be something that I'm interested in. But then they show, like, oh, but it's actually, like, a puzzle game. Like, that is kind of an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand what it is you're supposed to be. I think you're supposed to, like, be drawing shapes that occupy the volume of the numeric value and then figuring out how to draw all the shapes so they fit into the area that you were given.
Yeah, like in any given area, if you add up all of the numbers available, it should add up to the number of tiles, and mm-hmm. you just have to find a way without blocking anything from making all the tiles.
Which is an interesting puzzle concept. That's cool.
Yeah.
But it's out now, and I'm busy. At this point, they like did a bunch of like, games in quick succession, like the little sizzle reel. There's a game called Bzzzt. That is out this summer. This was actually a really interesting looking pixel art action game.
The animation looks amazing.
Yeah, this does look pretty good.
I'm interested in that one. That one's on my radar. Shim? Schism? No, it's not Schism. There's a game out July. Schism? Yeah, but there. Anyway, neither here nor there. I'm not really that interested. You guys interested in that one at all?
It's an interesting concept. You're a thing that jumps from shadow to shadow.
It's like a mouse? Or sorry, like a frog? Or something?
It reminded me of a game, like a puzzle platformer that came out on Switch not too long ago. A couple years back, I think. I think it was called The Shady Part of Me, where you could only like move in the shadows. Or no, you swap back and forth. You were your character was moving around, and then you had to like swap back and like
yeah, the little girl, right?
The little girl.
Yeah, that was really cool.
That was an interesting one. There's also one way back on the Wii called Lost in Shadow that did a similar thing to that. Animal Well, the one they showed next, that's out on May 9th. That one looks interesting to me as well. It's another like pixel art adventure platformer. Mm-hmm. That looks cool. You guys going to get Duck Detective out May 23rd?
Probably not.
I probably will not as well. Wes, Duck Detective?
Mm. I mean, maybe? If it was a goose, because nobody fucks with him.
Goose gumshoe?
They got teeth in their mouth and on their tongue.
Is that true?
Yeah.
What?
Geese are terrifying.
I think you're making that up.
Yeah, they're raptor chickens. You don't fuck with geese.
Another Crab's Treasure. They showed that one again. This one's been at a couple of presentations at this point.
This one I'm probably going to get. This one looks great.
It's out today.
Oh, is it really?
Yep.
I just got Dragon's Dogma 2, so probably not for a while.
Now you need to put that down and play
No, I just got this game, John.
Well, you can play that later and talk about another Crab's Treasure. And then they close out the show with a game I'm really excited for, SteamWorld Heist 2, out August 8th. Stop showing me pictures of geese. That's horrifying.
It's terrifying, isn't it? Teeth everywhere.
But I'm really pumped for SteamWorld Heist 2. It is, of course, a sequel to a game that originally came out on 3DS as a download-only title. I think they also eventually put it on Wii U. I don't know if they put the first one on Switch. Maybe they did.
What game was distracted by geese?
SteamWorld Heist 2. Mm. The first one, you might remember, was more like a spacefaring.
That one I couldn't... I actually have this game.
Yeah.
SteamWorld Heist. And I played
SteamWorld Heist 2. You got it early.
A little bit. I sucked at this game. I couldn't get through battles without like my whole party getting wiped. Like I had a hard time with this game.
It's so,
I couldn't get momentum on it.
Oh, really? Like tactical?
Very tactical.
And it also has like sort of aspects of what you would think of things that are more closely associated with roguelite things. Whereas if you could replay missions, but every time you entered the mission, it would like regenerate the level that you're in. And it wasn't like entirely randomly generated because there were elements that would be the same, like your objective would be the same and relatively within the same area, but the layout would switch around. Which, you know, I have mixed feelings about because I do like persistent levels because they can like ask really specific challenges of you and know that you're equipped to do it. And also like if you want to do level grinding, if you like know the method for going through levels, just quicker to churn experience that way. But I don't know. I think the sort of procedural generation of those levels worked for that game. Ryan, did you ever play the first SteamWorld Heist?
I did. Not for very long, though. I think I just kind of... I wouldn't say I gave up on it. I just kind of started playing other things and I never bothered to go back to it. I think it's an interesting concept, too. I do like the geometry of it. It's like a Worms Armageddon with a bunch of geometry in it. I don't know, for whatever reason, never really got into it that much. I mean, this does, it's a very good trailer, and from what I remember of SteamWorld Heist, it looks like that, but even better. Mm-hmm. But I'm probably not going to get it, and I'm probably not going to play it.
And it's in the high seas, as opposed to space.
Fantastic, that's great. I mean, because, of course, the best place to put anything metal is on the ocean.
Of course,
yep. Around water, salt water specifically.
I think that's like a narrative element of the game where like, no, they need to find fresh water. Like it's a commodity, it's a currency, because if they use the salt water, they'll rust. But, you know, they've mastered...
Well, they showed me. They showed me right there by actually having a narrative that
explains. Well, there's probably some smartass like in a pitch meeting somewhere like, well, wouldn't they just rust? Like, fuck, we better address that. Otherwise on a podcast somewhere.
Ryan from the Nintendo show may really...
They're going to poke holes in this logic.
One of those fucking shits is going to come after us about this, yeah.
It looks like there's going to be a bit more sort of, I guess, interaction with the world map sort of area, as opposed to just being like a level select to go from mission to mission. There'll be things to do and out on your boat with your robots. But yeah, it looks good. But that's it. That's all the games from the Indie Direct. We did it.
Yay.
There was one other game announced. I don't think I should send you guys the trailer. It was a couple days ago, so I don't remember. But there is a game that was not announced at the Indie Direct, which is a shame. Because it is a Lord of the Rings game, Tales of the Shire. And it is out, I think, at some point this year. Or it might be just a TBA.
Okay.
But it is like Animal Crossing, but you're hobbits.
Oh, God.
Which is just, that's just delightful. It's strange the way that the Lord of the Rings sort of property gets leveraged, because you don't see a whole lot, like, I think as much as you would expect, so like a mega franchise like Lord of the Rings to be leveraged, especially in video games. Like, they did that Gollum game that turned out to be utter trash, what, a year or two back?
Yeah.
And before that, like, the Shadows of Mordor thing. But, like, that, for all, like, the fucking Star Wars shit that they throw out there, and, like, all the superhero stuff, the, like, Lord of the Rings is, like, foundational literature for sort of fantasy stuff, movies and games and all sorts of media, comic books. But you don't see it maybe as milked as it could be.
That's true. I mean, it could just be that, like, we have the definitive thing already.
Maybe.
And it wasn't that long ago that it came out. Like, I mean, we talk about it on our retro show, so we just recently revisited, but that still means it was 20 years ago.
I think it's being re-released in theaters. I think it's getting re-released this summer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's great. You're right, though. It's probably the single most significant fictional book series written in the past 100 years or whatever. It's probably been... How long did it come out?
I don't know.
Like 1920s, 1930s, I think.
I'll go along with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's yeah, probably the most important work of fiction in the past 100 years. And yet, yeah, you don't see it thrown around as much as something like a contemporary of it being like Star Wars or something. Like Star Wars would be actually a perfect example.
And we probably talk about this every time something Lord of the Rings comes up, but like... Just like your basic turn-taking RPG that borrows so much from Lord of the Rings already. They don't really do that with this property.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe the estate is a bit more protective of it. But if it came out 100 years ago, it's probably not too far away from being public domain. Okay. I'm sure they're going to hate that.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, there's a couple of books I've been interested in. So it's the same with Lovecraft's mythology. There is this interest in cosmic horror that people have, but they just don't necessarily want to tie it to H.P. Lovecraft specifically, because, you know, certainly by today's standards, he had some pretty bad views on things. And also, it's just kind of like his style of writing is distinct, and it's cool, and it works, but no one should try to emulate that. They just love the idea of there being these... incredibly powerful elder gods. They like that concept, but they don't necessarily need it to be that specific scenario. So it could just be that we've had so many different iterations that are so heavily inspired by Lord of the Rings that no one feels like we need the most vanilla version of it.
Maybe.
Still, it's like, there's a reason why vanilla is the most popular ice cream flavor, because it's great. I don't know. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but you're right, though. It would be cool. It would be cool if the property was used for different styles of games and to do different things. Which, hey, we're getting the fucking Animal Crossing version.
Wes, you watched the trailer just now, yeah?
I did.
What'd you think?
I mean, yeah, it's Animal Crossing. It looks fun.
Yeah. It's got, I think a much more intricate, aesthetic to it as well. It looks much busier.
I immediately texted it to my girlfriend because she's a huge Lord of the Rings fan.
Oh, nice. Very good.
She watches the extended... edition marathon, all the, three movies
the way God intended.
Yeah, a few times a year.
Amazing.
What's the question? What kind of game do you want? Do you want a game where you're like Gandalf and you conjure some cheap tricks? What is the thing you're interested in doing?
What is the thing you want to do?
What do I want to do in Lord of the Rings? I don't really
know. All right, keep your secrets.
Yeah.
Well, they have those other Lord of the Ring games that came out on PlayStation. Where are they?
Third Age.
There's Shadow of Mordor, where you're that one random dude and you're just hacking through armies of orcs.
Time Crisis. I want a Time Crisis. But it's Lord of the Rings. It's just legless.
I mean, there's so much backstory to the actual happenings in the Lord of the Rings novels that they could just take any random story that he jotted down on a napkin and be like, let's fucking make a video game out of this.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, neither here nor there. That's it for new game announcements. There was a release date update. Braid, the definitive edition, or the Switch edition, got pushed back a little bit. It was due to come out April 30th. They pushed back a couple weeks to May 14th. It's cool to see that game coming to a Nintendo platform. It's been a pretty omnipresent... does it qualify as an indie game at this point? Neither here nor there. It doesn't matter. it's been on a ton of different platforms. Cool to see it come to a Nintendo one. And there were a few retro games added to the Nintendo Switch Online. Wrecking Crew 88. Amazing. Shit. I didn't say this word out loud until I'm trying to read it right here. Hebereki. Amazing Hebereki and Super R-Type. All for the Super Nintendo came out. I've heard of one of those games and the Super R-Type. And then for the N64 Nintendo Switch Online, Extreme G and Iggy's Wrecking Balls.
So two wrecking games, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And then wrecking not spelled correctly. Verily, it doesn't have the G, it's wreck-in. But it also doesn't have the W. They cut off a letter from... I don't know. I haven't heard of either of those games. They did not come up on our retro show when we talked about N64 games. So I can't pass judgment on quality, but I can pass judgment on my overall interest in them.
Sounds like wife is dying.
She's okay.
I heard like 7 sneezes back to back from across the house.
Cat's probably kicking up some dust, as cats do. So we got some new releases.
What?
Ryan, I want to know all about Balatro.
Oh, yeah. So it is a new game I basically just become obsessed with.
Good.
I literally cannot stop playing this game, Balatro. And it is...
What kind of name is that? Balatro? I mean...
I actually didn't really look up what my... I'm going to guess what it is that it's the name of a famous clown.
I'm looking this up.
It would make sense that it would be, because essentially it is a deck-building game, a deck-building roguelike game. But the twist on it being that it's actually centered around something that everyone's kind of familiar with, which is like a 52-card pack. You know, just like
playing cards.
Diamonds, clubs, yeah, aces, and or spades. And it's actually kind of a perfect game, and I think that's what makes it so addictive. Is, you know, I think about a lot of the other like deck-building kinds of games that I've ever played, and there's always this thing where you have to just sit there and like... figure out how it even works. That first obstacle that you have of any kind of deck building game is like, what is, it's like if you've just walked up, if you don't know anything about, like, say, Magic the Gathering, if you ever walked up and looked at a table of people playing Magic the Gathering, you're like, it would take me hours to just understand how to start playing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Balatro, what it does so well is that it takes something everyone's, like, I mean, you've played card games before, right? I'm sure you've used a 52-card pack. You kind of know some rules generally about it. You know, there's going to be 4 different suits, and there's going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4, up to 3 face cards and an ace card. And, like, you know that, like, 3 of a kind is better than 2 pair, right? You know that, like, a full house is better than 2 pair, right? Like, just generally, you've got some of this built in. Because you kind of already know that, it does so much of the prep work for what makes this game so fascinating as a deck builder, as a very, very tricky, fun, and difficult deck building game. And then from there, the game literally, when you play your very first hands of it, it really just feels like poker. It just feels like poker where you're given 7 cards and you've got 4 plays and 3 discards and you just got to hit a score. You just got to hit a basic score. Using, again, your knowledge of 3 of a kind's better than 2 pair, or that they're better than a pair, and a royal flush is the best hand you can get. And then the way that it'll tally points is you basically have the face values of the cards, and they'll get added in, and then a multiplier. And then, you know, you play it, you get some value for it, and then you run up the score. So you just, early on, you've got like a score of 300 you need to hit, and it's fairly simple by just taking your basic hands and playing them through. And then what will happen is rounds will progress. There will be basically 3 games that you play per what they call ante, and then 8 antes total to win. And it ramps up and gets progressively harder with each one. And then on top of that, and I don't want to get into the minutiae of the various components of the game, but the thing that makes this so exciting and so fun is that you get to fill your hand with Joker cards. And the Joker cards aren't playable cards. It's not like a card that you get to insert into your deck. It's actually something that modifies how the decks behave and how they operate. So you could get, I'm trying to think of just off the top of my head, like something that you can get would say, you can make a straight with a missing, like without a gap, or with a gap in it. So you could do like,
And so if you need a five card straight, you could do like ace, you could do like 8, 9, not 10, but then jack, king, queen. And that would still count as a straight. Or you could have one that just adds a multiplier to every spade that's played. So if you do three of a kind and one of them's a spade, it counts. If you do a flush, all five spades, five times that buff gets applied to the calculation of the points that you get for the round. And that's where the game gets so exciting. There's over 150 Joker cards. And at any given time, you have five that you can play. So five different ways to manipulate the calculations and have all this fun. And on top of that, there are a few other little, if you really get into it, there are a few other little mechanics that you get to engage with in the game that let you manipulate your deck. Like, I've literally had, and they will do things like buff up your cards, change your cards, destroy your cards, add new cards, create fictitious cards. Like, it's so, I remember when I first played, you know, like, five of a kind of a straight suit. It was like this, like, oh my god, only this game would come up with something so clever. It's, you know it's, you're capable of it. But it's wild to think that through the way that you can change the cards in the deck, that you could make it so you have six aces of spades in your deck, and you know that they're there, and you know you can get them, and you can play all five at the same time and get just this absurd score from playing all of these cards together. And there's all, yeah, there's like tons of different ways to play, where they kind of, you know, again, like I said, you start with like four turns and three discards. There's some where they decrease the turns, or they decrease the discards, or they make it so that your hand only starts with spades and hearts, so you still have 26 cards. You'll end up with the 13 cards, but 13 cards of all four is 52, but you'll end up with two sets of spades and two sets of hearts. And yeah, so for me, like, honestly, I just cannot put this game down. It is so fucking addictive, and I knew within 5 minutes of playing this game I was going to become obsessed with it. It was just such an exciting and engaging kind of, like, I don't know, a mind game. It really makes you think. It's really, really a fun game.
How long does it take to, like, just churn through a round?
So, I would say probably about 30, 45 minutes.
Okay.
Also, it's worth noting that the ante you have to beat to get to the next level, it increases exponentially. And I mean that literally. By the time that you get to about, so you can get eight antes, and then by the time you hit your eighth ante and you kind of just win, the game has an endless mode and you can go on thereafter. The highest I've ever gotten to is 12 ante, at which point it's about, you know, if I needed 800,000 points to get past the eighth, by the time I've hit the 12, I need 600 million. The game, you know, like when you go into a calculator and you just blow out the number past the trillions and it just goes like E20?
Yeah.
Those are the scores you need to hit when you get into 14 and 15. And they have... and there is also... I didn't bring this up earlier. I guess I could mention it. I think it's a kind of a fun thing. Is there is an economy to it as well, where you make money. You're not betting money. It's not like you make a decision like, I'm betting $1 this round or $5 this round. But how you use your money determines whether you can open card packs, whether you could just, like, buy things in the shop, like buy jokers. Every time you finish a round, you go back to the shop and there's card packs that you can get. It's, gosh, just thinking about it makes me want to play it. Like, I swear to god, I can't tell you the last time I played a game that is this, like, it is like crack. It is just so addictive. And if you don't believe me, I would suggest you guys do this. Go on YouTube and look up first time playing Balatro. And just watch people for the first 10 minutes of playing this game. Watch how suckered into the gameplay loop they get. I have not seen anyone that picks this up and is like, eh, this is dumb.
So, a Balatro in ancient Rome was a professional jester or buffoon.
Hey, what'd I tell you?
There you go.
What'd I tell you? It's a clown.
According to Wikipedia. So, you know.
I figured, yeah, the whole game is centered around Joker cards. So, it makes sense that they would have it in some way reference a clown. Absolutely recommend you play it. And again, if anybody doesn't like deck building games or doesn't like card games, you've done all the work by just simply knowing how playing cards work.
Yeah, the barrier to entry is real low.
It sounds like it should be boring. It sounds like it should be boring that you're dealing with this and not like Hearthstone or something like that. Or there was a game I played recently called Inscription, and it took me a while just to
get the basics down just to kind of understand what I'm trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And Balatro is just like, it's the kind of game that you feel like you could just sit at a slot machine and play all day. Totally recommend it. It's like $15. Like, you're not going to get this much, you know, buying power out of a game on the Switch library than something like this. So, totally recommend it. Double thumbs up. Like, holy shit, this game is great.
Very cool. A few other new releases. Freedom Planet 2 was out on the 4th. There's a game called Kudzu that was out on the 5th. I actually have that game. I bought it on the Switch. And I am playing through it this week. And I specified that I bought it on Switch because this is also a game that was a release for the Game Boy.
Really?
Yeah. Like, back on April the 5th, they released it physically on the Game Boy. This is a Game Boy game that they also made available to download on Switch for $5. And, and you know how a lot of times we used to look at pixel art games in particular, and like, oh yeah, it looks like an NES game, looks like a Super Nintendo game. But really, and we've mentioned this before, what it looks like is how you remember these old games looking. Like, no, this actually, they made it for Game Boy hardware, and it runs on Game Boy hardware.
They used period technology to make this.
Yeah, they used a TI-86 calculator. Nice. And made a video game. And it's a sort of a Zelda-style adventure game where, you know, you go through a zone, and there's a map, like you're going through a dungeon, and you fight off enemies, and you find the switches to open the doors, you find a tool in the dungeon somewhere that's going to help you access the boss fight. And it's not as sophisticated as a Zelda game insofar as, like, you're not actually swapping around gear and equipment to do different things. Your primary form of attack, the only form of attacking that I have so far, is a machete, where it's like a sword in Zelda. But then it'll say, like, hey, now you've gotten the gardening hoe. In case you weren't aware, kudzu is a type of plant. It's like a vine that grows really quickly. So the game is sort of it's the enemy in the game. It's like overtaking this area. So, you know, you have to fight back with your powers of gardening. And one of the first upgrades you get is like, okay, well, now you got a garden hoe. And with this garden hoe, you can destroy these tile blocks that's like rocky soil. Okay, now you can move through this area. And it's how they gate you off from certain zones. But it's not like you have to then equip that thing as you would equip a shovel in Zelda and get the stuff out of your way. Like, no, it just kind of gives your primary attack this extra function. Not only can it destroy weeds now, but now you can also clear this rocky soil. And I just got another piece of gear, which is a glove. And the glove, much like in Zelda games, allows you to push heavy rocks out of your way. So you can access more areas that way now. And again, these aren't things where you have to open up a menu and swap around. They just become part of your two-face button interface with the game. Because it's made for a Game Boy. You got your A button, you got your B button, you got start and select. That's all you have to work with. And I think, not as sophisticated. It's nice that you don't have to fumble around in a menu to swap these things out, but it also doesn't give you a whole lot of different ways of interacting with things. Like, you don't have bombs or things like a boomerang or a rock's feather, ways that you're going to engage with the world or with enemies. You're just kind of walking around and slashing things with your machete all the time. That's really all I've done in terms of combat or exploring, just kind of like walk between the screens and swing the machete around. I also don't know that it was properly optimized for Switch for a couple of reasons. Sometimes, like, the hit detection, like the stun damage, can be a bit late. Like, I think, like, oh, I walked into an enemy. Oh, I walked right through them. Oh, no, I'm all the way through them. Now I'm taking damage. Okay. So it's a bit finicky and looks like it could use some...
Are you sure you're not playing, like, a cloud version of the game?
I'm pretty sure I'm not playing... Maybe I'll switch off the
internet. A cloud version of a Game Boy game.
Maybe I'll switch off the internet and see if it still works. But overall, it's, like, super detracting from the experience because it's such a simple game that it doesn't... It hasn't impacted things so much that it's like, nah, this is unplayable, buggy garbage. I can't put up with it. The exploration, the moving around in the dungeons is so snappy that it keeps momentum moving forward. So it's not like I feel like I'm losing progress, I'm not able to make progress. It's very easy to make a lot of progress in the game. So I think that that kind of works to counteract some of the buggy things that are happening. Another thing that's happening is in some of the given zones or dungeon areas, they're like, okay, well, here's a door you got to pass through, but in order to clear all the vines from this door, you have to go find the root vines somewhere scattered in this dungeon. There's four. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go find four. And I have found that if when you find the root, it takes one attack to take out half his HP and then another attack to finish killing it off, and it clears off one of the sets of vines. And I found that if I spam the attack, sometimes it will register as taking it down to zero HP twice. So by killing the one root, I clear two vines. And it'll even like give you a message. You killed one. There's two more to go. Oh, you killed one. There's one more to go. And it was me killing the same one. So it looks like, hopefully, I would assume it runs better where you're actually playing on Game Boy hardware, because that's what it was made for. But it looks like the Switch version could use some updating, some polishing before it's in a perfectly playable state.
Did you see what the physical package looks like? Did they actually make like a little cardboard box and everything too? Like a classic?
They did. They made a cardboard. Yeah, they really did the presentation really well. That's definitely the audience that they're going for, the sort of a retro gaming audience that would want to buy this thing on original hardware. It's an interesting game. I'm interested to see what other sort of skills or things they introduce. I'm not really sure how far into the game I am in. There's like a menu slot for, it looks like, eight different pieces of gear, and I have three of them so far. So maybe I'm nearing a halfway point. Maybe there's upgrades and things that you can do. There's it handles HP a lot. HP, thank you. A lot like Zelda does, where it doesn't show anything on like a heads-up display, but it will let you know, hey, you've taken damage, is how much you have left really quick, which is nice that they're keeping the HUD clear. You have like your hearts, your maximum HP, and then you'll have your potions that you can use. And throughout the game, you're expanding the amount of potions you can carry, like as if they were empty bottles, and enemies will drop like things like currency or refills for your potions. They don't actually drop actual HP refills, they drop potion ingredients that you can then use to refill your HP. It's pretty neat. It's a cool little concept. Hopefully they get it running up to snuff on Switch at some point, but I don't want to be too judgmental on it because somebody went and made a Game Boy game. Good for them. Botany Manor was out on the 9th, Moonglow Bay on the 11th. We talked a little bit about these games when we previewed. Grounded released for Switch on the 16th. I hear that game's not running well, which is a shame because it looked interesting. Planet of Lana also came out on the 16th. I downloaded that one. I finished it as well. It's not a long game. It maybe took 3 or 4 hours to get through. And this is one, it works a lot like Limbo, Inside. We've seen these like side-scrolling puzzle platformer games before. Something that it does differently is a little ways into the game, it gives you like this little pet, this little dog-looking dude that you can give commands to in really specific situations, take direct control over to do something. But it gives like this extra layer of to the process of solving certain puzzles. Like, hey, you have to have your dog do this, you go do this, and then you tell the dog, while your dog is in this position, tell it to do another thing, it activates like a gate or whatever that you can work your way through. And then you have to like figure out how to reunite and then proceed to the next area. So I think that was a cool little mechanic. I don't think it's quite as sophisticated as something like a Limbo or an Inside, because a lot of the puzzles boil down to find a way to sneak around this robot. And don't get caught by the robot. Don't let your dog get caught by the robot, because then you'll just die.
Oh, so it's a little nightmares.
So, well, not as sophisticated as that either. Not as interesting visually as that. Like it's a nice looking game. And it reminds me, there's a game back on Wii U called Planet Alpha that was like on this really like Avatar style planet where there's also like weird bombastic things. That the flora and fauna of the area are really intricate. It doesn't like go up to those same levels, but you are like on this alien planet, and there's cool things happening in the background and stuff, and you go through some different attractive environments. But the overall design of the puzzles doesn't really reach the same a level of variety as you get out of something like a Limbo or Inside or some of these other, like, or certainly like Cocoon, which is a game that we talked about last year that was really, really good. But yeah, I think like overall, if you've already played games like Limbo and Inside and really enjoyed them, you'd probably get something out of Planet of Lana. But like of the list of these sort of like puzzle adventure games that are available on Switch, Planet of Lana doesn't crack like the top 20. That might be mean. It definitely doesn't crack the top 10 of these sort of style games, but it's okay. It's fine. Aiden Chronicle came out on the 23rd, digital only. The physical copy got delayed. This is another one where it does not seem like it's running too great on Switch right now. Hopefully they get that running up to snuff. The Ninja Turtles arcade game Wrath of the Mutants came out on Switch on the 23rd. This is a Turtles podcast. I'm talking about Ninja Turtles. This game doesn't look great. It's not a good looking one.
Gasp.
Yeah. It's based on the... There's like a Nickelodeon like TV series for Ninja Turtles relatively recently. I don't know if it's still on. But it's like using those designs. And it's kind of like a it's a beat 'em up, but it's not the sort of beat 'em up that we've been seeing a lot on Switch. Have been really good. Streets of Rage, Shredder's Revenge, River City Girls, all these games have been really, really good. This one's like it uses polygons and it's emphasizing more of the 3D environments. It's not a good looking game. It's kind of disappointing, but we have another Ninja Turtles game in July, so that's one worth looking forward to. Saga Emerald Beyond and One Crab's Treasure came out today. Wes, looking forward to your thoughts. For One Crab's Treasure, I don't expect to play Saga Emerald Beyond.
I want to, but Dragon's Dogma, I just got it, guys. I just bought it.
You can play more than one game.
I just bought it. I have so little time.
But yeah, well, let's close it out with some games coming out in May. So we got, and a lot of these we've already talked about. The Endless Ocean game, Endless Ocean Luminous, that was shown at a previous Direct showcase. Yeah.
I have no interest in the game at all. Hey, look at me swim around and look at all the fish. Who cares?
There are more mission-based things in this game, but I share your sentiment. Like, there were two of these games on Wii, which qualifies it for our franchise tier rankings.
Oh, sure does.
We better put it on the list. but I was not interested in those then. I'm not interested in them now. If I saw it like in a like $15 bargain bin and I had nothing else going on, I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll give it a shot. But nah, I'm good. We already talked about Little Kitty Big City Ryan is in.
Sure.
It's a goose game with hats.
Oh, there are hats. That's actually a really good point.
You want to see this one cat wear different hats?
I do want to see the cat wear different hats.
She could be a ladybug.
That's delightful.
I'm a little upset, though, that that's what the augments are and that you don't get to be different kinds of cats.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I feel like it's a wasted opportunity to, like, educate people on different species of cats.
Why can't you be a calico or, just like, maybe I'm just a black cat.
Maybe that's DLC.
Maybe that's the, I don't know.
Go buy your 99-cent skins.
Like, I mean, not everything needs to be, like, a RPG, but again, totally. You could have the different kinds of cats have different stat distributions.
Well, like mittens, kitten mittens.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a fantastic.
Is your cat too noisy? Biomutant is coming to Switch on the 14th. Wes.
Biomutant?
You remember this
I
game,
that
right?
That was on. What did I play that on? It wasn't on Switch.
Did you? Are they re-releasing it? Did it get pulled? Who cares?
Oh. The thing with the. Oh, yeah. The thing with the gerbils. Okay. I don't fucking know what they are. Yeah, this game was a giant pile of meh, and I wanted it to be good, but I just did not care.
Hmm.
It was weird. Like, you're the gerbil, and there's different kinds of gerbils you can be. By the end,
much like in Little Kitty Big City, you can be all those different cats.
It really didn't fucking matter what gerbil you picked. And, like, you're going to different areas, and then a narrator pops up. He's like, he doesn't know what to do in this situation. Let's watch. You know, that kind of, like...
Oh, I remember you talking about this. There's, like, a weird narration to it.
Which, you know, it was fun, but it just always kind of felt like a little out of place. You're like, all right, this is a little... I just chopped that thing's head off. You really want to tell me about that? All right. There's, like, different, like, clans of gerbils, and you had to side with a clan to do missions and shit. I don't know. I wanted to like this game. There's a mech you build. I wanted to like this game, but it just... Something about it was just seemed... Like, the magic seemed pointless, and a lot of what you were doing just seemed pointless. And it just seemed better just to hack them away with the sword. I don't know. It may be good. I may be wrong about this. I have it for PS4. If your PS4 was working, I let you play it.
And may it rest in peace.
May it rest in peace. That's what you get for playing in sleep mode forever. It's not a Switch,
it's
John.
It's supposed to go into
it's
sleep
mode.
It's
not a Switch, John. It can't handle that.
It tells you, put your console to sleep. Don't shut it off. Put it in sleep mode so it can get updates. It tells you to do that.
How did, like, in the early 2000s, Sony make Walkman that could, like, survive an atomic blast?
Right.
And they can't make a console that can stay on overnight?
It dies when it's going to sleep. Yeah, it's, they should be embarrassed.
Well, at least it went peacefully. It is sleep.
Oh, we're not supposed to mention that. The Pikachu died in its sleep.
Yeah, Pikachu died. Oh, that suddenly got a lot darker. All right.
Braid is out on the 14th. We mentioned that already. We already talked about Lorelei and the Laser Eyes out on the 16th. Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door, is getting its remake on the 23rd. I'm in. You guys in? That's okay. You don't have to be.
We're happy that you're happy.
I mean, I do want to play this game. It did seem like a good game.
I am very happy. In addition to Paper Mario. Revamped graphics, there's also, they're adding more quick travel places to let you zip around better, which would be good. Easier to swap characters in and out of your party, which is nice. Updated hint system. There's an updated official soundtrack, but you can turn on just the standard GameCube soundtrack if you so choose. And then, of course, all the other bells and whistles you would expect out of a sort of remake like this, like a music player, concept art gallery, a lot of stuff that's like already in games or like as a standard package. But very cool. It seems like whoever's developing is putting a lot of effort into the remake. I'm pumped. Big thumbs up. I like this game. It's a really good one. And then World of Goo 2 is out on the 23rd.
You grabbing this one?
I think I'm going to get World of Goo 2.
You liked the first one.
I did like the first one.
You played a lot of that one.
This is another one. I feel like it's been like a recurring theme on the show. Like, hey, this was a game for Wii that I remember. And World of Goo, played it on Wii. But yeah, it's a neat little like construction puzzle game where there's, you know, like physics to the way you're building things, and if you're like building something that's too tall, it's gonna topple over. But then sometimes you want things to topple over, and if you need to like build something across a gap, you need to make sure it's properly supported or the whole thing collapses on you. It's cool. It's a cool game, and interesting that it took them 15 years to make another one.
It's interesting that they bothered.
Oh, right.
They are union construction workers, so...
Does this also qualify it for a Nintendo franchise? For tier ranking? No, it's on other game systems?
Yes, World of Goo is on other game systems, and there is also not a Nintendo company that made it. I mean, we do, like, fudge those rules at times, like with Bayonetta, Fatal Frame, for our tier rankings. But World of Goo is made by the Tomorrow Corporation.
Well, it's only appearing... The only console it's appearing on is Nintendo. It says it's Nintendo, Microsoft, Linux. So, you know.
The PC.
Yeah. Mac operating systems.
Yeah, I think this might be one where Nintendo had the console exclusivity.
Oh, there's a Game Boy version. That's cool.
But yeah. And then that's addition to all. The ones that we talked about. I forgot to put them on the list, but games like Animal Well is also out in May. But yeah, it'll be good. Ryan, did you like Civil War? Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That was pretty good.
We went and saw Civil War the other week.
How'd that go?
It's good. I don't know if people will be disappointed or what they're expecting that movie to be. It's kind of about what I kind of thought it would be.
It's actually pretty different from what I thought it was because I didn't watch any previews or anything. It's definitely more of like, rather than focusing on like this larger conflict, it was like, no, like these journalists are traveling from attempting to travel from New York to DC in order to try to get this big story, this scoop that they're trying to get, and it's just them trying to go through this section of the country, and there's this war-torn country, rather than like give you like these military commanders and why things are happening and who's on what side. You're learning things about the world and the conflict as you go, but that's never the primary focus of the narrative.
Yeah, I think it does a good job of doing a lot of world building just through little snippets. It's not so much like someone sits down and explains to the characters like what's going on with the world.
Which
you just kind of have to absorb it by osmosis.
Which I think is a really great writing for the movie because there are so many opportunities where characters are just sitting talking to each other and they really artfully dodge. Like the temptation must have been there to be like, hey, they're having a conversation. One character says to another, hey, how do we end up like this? And like they don't have that conversation, which is good, because that would have been a bad run of dialogue.
Yeah. And again, it's not like they're not clearly delineating like this side is progressives, this side's conservative, these are Democrats and these are Republicans. It's not really like that. And I think if this there is a and it is a political stand. But I think that the political stand is just anti-fascism, which I think everyone should be against totalitarian leaders and people consolidating power and controlling all of the people. Like, we are a nation of people that believe in the concept of liberty and individual rights.
Yeah, there was you do definitely get the message that the Nick Offerman character, who's playing the current president under siege, is the representation of the fascism. But it never like directly addresses, okay, the people who are going to go take them out, they're the leftist progressives or, you know, they're whoever. Like they don't make that sort of political statement.
And even the group that we see in it that are violently xenophobic, we don't even know whose side they're on.
Mm-hmm.
they may hate the Nick Offerman, you know, dictator guy just as much as they like him. Like, we don't know. That so remains so unanswered in it, and you know that's essentially what happens, and that's the whole concept, is that this conflict exists between, you know, California and Texas joining together to combat this, you know, what would seemingly be the federal government. But it also, just again from those little snippets of dialogue you hear, like they say that, you know, Florida is no longer part of the Republic. They're just not fighting anybody.
If there was one thing that I wanted to know more about, what the fuck happened here?
Yeah.
Like, what? Wait, are we our own thing now? I'm pumped.
Yeah.
Well, and it's more like riding like our army in airboats.
Yeah.
Everyone's wearing alligator skins.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone just kind of knew that as soon as all of this would go down, that Florida would be the one that just, like, you know, unties from the dock and just kicks off into the water. It's just like, okay, we're good, everybody. Bye-bye.
We're going to die the way we lived.
But yeah, it's true. It's like Texas and California are the economic engines of our nation. I mean, they I don't know, I'm not going to make up a percentage, but they account for so much of our GDP as a nation. And yeah, as does New York and Florida. Like, these are, you know, so much of what defines our nation as this, you know, powerhouse globally, and our own identity even, and by population, everything about America is largely centered in kind of just a handful of states.
Mm-hmm. And the stat that I heard recently was like, if California was its own country, it'd be like the fifth largest GDP in the world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think one of the things that they especially choose to show a number of times is between like the two battling factions that you see, there's just like a total utter disregard for the value of life for whoever they're in conflict with. There are times where they're just whoever is in the position of power, whoever got the gun at the time, is just 100% willing to just outright execute someone who they find on the other side, who maybe they have, you know, in a position where they've surrendered, or definitely there's the balance of power is not equal in the particular conflict they're in at the time. Like, nah, never mind, just fucking shoot them all. Who cares?
Yeah.
And there's some disturbing moments in the movie where you're not exactly sure which side is which at the time, but they're definitely more than willing to just like, I do not have any value for the life of the person who's wearing the opposite uniform.
Yeah, that you absolutely see that. And I think that it's a lot of what we see in modern foreign conflicts. That's what makes it so jarring, is to see these things that we see in, you know, footage coming from other places that are destabilized or that are in conflict or at war. And it looks, and it's just us this time, though. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, you very much want that kind of, like, hoorah, America wins. You feel like you have that attitude in so many movies about war and just about conflict and, you know, this concept of, like, the stars and stripes and everything. And it's totally devoid. It's kind of the antithesis of that. It's very cool. Very cool to see it play out like that.
Yep. It's a good movie.
I know you listened to Pod Save America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you listen to the interview with Alex Garland?
I did.
I don't know about him.
I'm not sure about him either.
He is too centrist for his own good.
Mm.
He came off as quite the conservative apologist.
Yeah, and you know, it's a bit disappointing to hear. Like, I understand why he made the movie the way he did, and I understand what he's saying about.
He also wants to get butts in seats. He doesn't care if it's a Republican or Democrat that's watching his movie. He does want to get people to watch his movie, too. So he's probably being a bit diplomatic there.
And there is value to people of all sorts of variety of political opinion to see the movie and try to receive some sort of message that's being sent there. There's value to that. I think that when it comes to the actual execution of politics, of policy, there is a very real danger of conservative politics, extreme right politics, letting people, pulling people further to the right, moving that Overton window to where politics that would have been considered very conservative a few years ago now seem more reasonable. Like, it making it to the point where, like, a 15-week abortion ban now seems reasonable? Like, whereas a few years ago, like, no, that's not a reasonable position at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the danger of adopting a policy. Like, no, we have to be centrist, because then it just ends up pulling you to the center right.
Yeah, you can't really say that you want to be in the center while at the same time the gamesman, you know, like, what is the game theory of it all, ends up resulting in the most extreme of both parties taking, you know. And I am a progressive. I would argue that the left's most progressives are not nearly as extreme as the right's most right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what you get. This whole primary process always is leading us down this path of having the most extreme possible candidate win a primary in districts that are already locked up for their party to begin with. There's no incentive to move towards the middle, because you've already, by winning the primary, you've won the election.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's, you know, a lot of the problems in politics that we have are so intertwined with each other. You're talking about things like politicians being able to draw the maps and choose who's voting for them, so you just end up with very safe areas for, you know, either side of the political spectrum have, like, their safe zones, and only a handful of ones where people, like, actually do to compete for votes. And then intertwined with the problem of money in politics and who's able to give to politicians and how they become entangled with those sorts of interests. And there's really no real easy way to solve it all, because you kind of have to solve them all at once.
Yeah, that's true. I do hope that that's something that, you know, gets tackled in future years, and just in reshaping the way that we do politics here in America. Mm. I think it would be for the best if there was a
system that pulled people, again, wanting to be more towards the middle, or at least just giving us candidates on both sides that at least try to appeal to the other side rather than, you know, trying to lock in their most hardcore devotees.
Well, and what sucks about being on the progressive left is that, you know, we are equally convinced that what we want, how we want government to behave, and what sort of society we want to live in is the right way for government to operate, the right way for society to operate. And having to sort of compromise on that to have a more easily digestible, slow-moving sort of form of politics. Like, I want college to be free, and I want healthcare to be free, and I want people to have guaranteed housing, and I want people to have a guaranteed basic income. And I think, like, these are things that would make society better and a better place to live.
They should have just thought about that before becoming peasants.
Oh, you. You're quoting Treasure Planet at us.
What?
What? These are sort of things that will, I think, make society better. But in order to do these things, you have to win elections in more competitive races. So maybe you can't advocate for these things to happen as quickly as possible. And it sucks because you want people of all sorts of religions and sexual identity and gender identity to have equal rights and protection under the law, like, immediately. You want it to happen right now. Mm. And that's not the way politics moves. And that sucks.
Yeah. It's a perpetual work in progress. Mm. You're always trying to work towards the next good thing.
And yeah, you can go back 100 years and you have, you know, women's suffrage. That's how far we've gone. That,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was a time when it was, women weren't even allowed to vote, and, like, you know, there's still so much more.
West calls those the good old days.
I was just about to make that joke, damn it. Yeah, the good old days.
One day they'll have equal pay. We'll get there.
Yeah, and that was a huge win in the past for, you know, women's equality. But again, right now, like we're seeing with the women being stripped of their own, you know, bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
It's a concern, big concern. If we, you know, if men were the ones that got pregnant, we would sure as shit not be losing that, right?
Oh, and it's scary because, you know, Ripley is 11 in a couple of years. If, God forbid, if she was assaulted in any way, I think in this day we have a 6-week ban, if not just an all-out ban. Like,
I mean, Ripley's... It's currently a 15-week ban that's passed pending... Yeah, they have just some sort of, like, this. Again, this is kind of how insane the laws are being crafted right now, that pending a Supreme Court decision, if the Supreme Court rules in favor, it will turn into automatically a 6-week ban.
Mm. Oh, and we do have, on this next upcoming election, 2024, we do have a ballot measure to just have abortion access in the state, which will be good. But, like, God forbid, if anything were to ever to happen to Ripley and there's a ban in the state, like, Ripley's autistic. There's, like, no guarantee that she would be able to communicate that something has happened to her.
Yeah.
In the time window required for her to get the medical care she would need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
The movie Civil War.
That's right. We were talking about Civil War. Oh, and the Alex Garland interview. Yeah, like...
Yeah. He's also, I mean, he's British, right?
Yeah.
So he has his own perspective. And as I understand, their
centrism might be different from our centrism.
I also understand that actually in October, they have their own election, some kind of election. I don't know that much about their politics, but I know they have an election coming up, and it's presumed that there will be a big swing to the left because of it. I think that they've had some hardliners that have gotten into power over there, and I believe it's fallout from things like Brexit, the whole leaving the EU and stuff like that. So that they're kind of over it. They're kind of over.
Now, a lot of their their right wing reactionary politics that have been happening in their country over the past, it feels like the past decade, has been like a reaction to a lot of the sort of right wing politics that have been happening here. Like people having negative reactions to immigration. and like keep Britain for the British kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was xenophobic and, you know, pretty fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It's a good movie. They were the ones that tried to take over the whole fucking world. They wanted a global empire. The sun never set on the British Empire.
Yeah, now
they said.
Their little island they don't want to share.
Yeah,
that, right. Where they keep other people's stuff. I don't know if you knew this, but they have this whole building where they just keep other people's stuff. That's and insane. They like, welcome to our museum. Like, no, that stuff you stole.
Yeah.
Give it back. Yeah. Next up, we'll do a Pokemon show.
Ooh.
I'm excited. Are you guys excited?
Pumped.
What are we doing with it?
I don't know. We'll figure something out, I guess.
Yeah.
I've been playing a little bit of Pokemon X.
I didn't boot it up, but I brought out the 3DS because you said you were playing X and Y. I wanted to put in at least put in one of my old carts and just sort of see what I was doing with it.
I think I've maybe played that game to credits twice, maybe. But maybe we'll get into it on the Pokemon show because I always seem to get stuck in this one area. But anyway,
that is a game I probably only played to credits twice, but then played another 100 hours.
Yeah, there's a lot to do in that game.
Yeah.
We'll do a mini show. We'll do a retro show. Not much in the way of GameCube games, but there are a lot of GBA games worth getting into in the retro show. So that'll be good. And we'll wrap it up at the end of the month and keep the cycle going. That's it. End of podcast.
So long.